When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak.
It's finally time, time to get back to it once again with your boys, the Decibel Geek Podcast. My name is Aaron Camaro, joined as always by my good friend Chris Sinzak. Now, you've had over a week now of recovery time. How are you feeling today?
I'm great. I'm happy to be back doing our show again.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited. And, you know, one thing that we did before the Rockin' Pod Expo was took donations for the Rockin' Pod Expo, and we're giving up spots on the show. Mm-hmm. And today, we've got a special guest, and we're coming back at you with one of our very favorite themes, and that is the Radio Sucks Radio Show. And, you know, speaking of getting back to business and taking care of business, we're going to get some of that out of the way right now before we get into this week's episode. So let's get right to it. Talking about iTunes reviews, we got one right here, 5 stars. Comes to us from the good old USA. It's entitled Rockin' Like It Should Be. Goes a little something like this. Chris and Aaron put all their passion into this podcast. There has never been a better one, in my opinion. Wow. And I've listened to many before stumbling upon this one. These guys totally speak my language. I'm happy and jealous of them because I wish I could be talking with them and joining in on the conversation. I just want to jump through my speaker, crack one open with them, and talk about good rock and music. Listen to this podcast, but be forewarned, it's addicting. That's awesome. 5 stars. Comes to us from Joey Espo in New Haven, Connecticut.
Wow, that's very a great cool. review.
That is a great review. That's a perfect one right there. Somebody reading that's going to go, man, I got to check this out. Be forewarned, it's addicting.
Yeah.
All right, we got another one. This comes to us from Podchaser. That's right, you guys, check out Podchaser. It's a great website. It's got all kinds of information about all different kinds of podcasts on there. Highly recommended. This one's 5 stars, and it goes a little something like this. I came across the Decibel Geek Podcast several years ago while I was battling cancer. I was stuck in the hospital during chemo treatments for hours, and listening to Chris and Aaron talk about my favorite subject was a piece of normality they brought me with every episode. The first thing I noticed is these guys love metal. They truly have a passion for the genre of music, and it shows. Surviving cancer has taught me one major important thing in my life. Time is valuable. I never waste a moment of it. I'm happy to give some of that precious time listening to Chris and Aaron. Keep kicking ass and bringing the metal. That comes to us from our good friend Pat Catalano. Man. It doesn't get any better than that, does it?
No, that's as good as it gets. And
I mean, to think, when we started this, we kind of started it for ourselves, you know, to have fun and try something new. And look at all the lives we've affected by doing this show, especially in a way like that, where we really, truly are helping people, you know, get through life. Life's not easy.
Yeah.
But, man, talk about battling cancer and us helping you get through it. Pat, man, we love you for this review, and, you know, we don't take it lightly at all. It means the world to us.
Yeah, I've talked to Pat several times on and off over the years.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
And when he was going through the treatments, I remember him messaging me this stuff like this, and I was like, if we helped in any small way while you beat the hell out of cancer, then I'm happy we were part of it. So,
right.
That definitely eclipses any kind of love you can get for
that's right.
a show.
Cancer's tough, but it can't beat metal.
So we're addicting, and we cure cancer.
Wow, what more do you need? See? Decibel Geek Podcast. Saving rock and roll, saving lives.
Right.
I love it.
All right, so let's introduce our awesome guest this week.
We ain't got Geeks of the Week?
Oh, yeah, we do have Geeks of the Week, don't
we? You're going to skip it, huh? You're going to be taking people's advice?
Wait a minute, I don't.
You don't have Geeks of the Week? Geeks of the Week are all the awesome people that shared and retweeted last week's episode. We don't have your names this week.
I'm hitting myself in the head right now.
We love you guys, and we thank you for it. You know, that's okay, because some people don't like hearing Geeks of the Week. So this week, we'll skip it, and we'll get right to it. This week, very special guest. We got our good friend D-Hud back on with us. That's right, David Hudson from Digital Killed the Radio Star. And he's joining us today for, you know it, Radio Sucks. What volume?
34.
Holy moly. What's up, D-Hud?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I am great. Just got off for work from a 10-hour shift, have football on, and talking to my buddies on Decibel Geek.
Don't tell me the score, because I'm
yeah, we're going to go watch it after this. First game of football back tonight in America.
Yeah.
I know. All is right with the world.
Awesome. Well, it was good to see you a couple weeks ago here in Nashville at the Rockin' Pod Expo. And
yeah.
You guys had a good turnout. You guys loaded up on a ton of interviews. So, yeah, it was a good weekend for you guys, right?
Man, it was so much fun. I got in on Thursday. And, of course, you know, we saw you at scoreboard Thursday night. And Courtney and Craig Gass sat down with us for a couple hours. And then Friday, me and the guys from Potter Than Hell, we went vinyl shopping all day and met up with Stephen Michael for barbecue. And then, of course, went and saw the mighty Tora Tora Friday night. And I left when they got through playing, because there's no way I didn't want to feel bad Saturday. So, I mean, you know, once you turn 40, man, you got to get in bed earlier. The next mornings are pretty rough. But
oh, yeah.
Just before we get started, you guys, I mean, that thing was awesome. And it's really fun. And the great thing about it is, I think all of us that go are establishing friendships beyond just being podcasters.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is, you know, really speaks a lot. And Chris, several of the people that we had that were guests off mic commented on how well they thought it was how much they really enjoyed being around you guys. So big round of applause to you guys.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm just happy it all came off the way it did, and we're excited to do it again next year.
And it's got to make you feel good to know, like, even the rock stars are like, man, this is awesome.
Means a lot. Yeah. It's definitely this year. I mean, last year met my expectations. This year totally exceeded them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the building was that we had it in was great.
Mm-hmm.
The proximity to all the hotels was great, like just like it was last year. But the building, I thought, was a lot more inviting for the podcast and the layout, and I just thought it was great. I'm looking forward to next year. I know it's going to be bigger and better.
Oh yeah, we're definitely aiming for bigger next year.
Well, I mean, the word of mouth is going to get out from some of the people that were there.
Yeah.
You know, so that can't hurt things at all.
Not at all. Yeah, I think we got a good thing rolling here.
At the Rockin' Pod Expo, I sat down with Luke Carl for a minute.
Yeah.
And we were having a beer, and we were just shooting the breeze about all kinds of different things. And somebody comes up to him, as, you know, radio DJs know, and Luke Carl knows just about better than anybody. And this person said, "Oh, Luke Carl, man, you're awesome. You know, love your show. But, you know, even satellite radio, man, you guys are playing better songs, but you're still playing the same songs over and over and over again." Oh, they totally called him out on it. I looked at Luke and I laughed and I said, "That ain't the first time you ever heard that, is it?" And he's like, "Oh, God, no." You know, he hears it all the time, you know, but the days of the DJ getting to put their own personality into their shows, all the way up to the greatest, like Luke Carl, all the way down to a guy just first starting in radio this weekend doing his first shift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the power of the personality of the DJ is gone and it's dead. You know, when you're listening to radio, you're hearing pre-programmed, pre-packaged songs that they think you want to hear. Who are they? We don't know. We know they suck and they don't know nothing about rock music. And that's why we do the Radio Sucks radio show. And D-Hud, you know what it's all about. So today, you're the DJ. You're the man picking the songs.
All right, guys. Y'all ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. So I don't really have a theme per se. So the first song I'm going to go with is Somebody Knockin', which is the first song off the debut and only album from Izzy Stradlin and the Juju Hounds.
I love that album.
I loved that album when it came out, and Izzy Stradlin to me is just – I think it's – he's just so cool, and a lot of it I think is myth because you never see him. So, you know, his the coolness factor of him just grows, you know, year after year, And this album to me was everything that Izzy Stradlin is. It was part New York Dolls. It was part punk. It was part Aerosmith. Even had they covered a reggae song and turned it into a punk song. And at the end, you know, had like a reggae coda to it. But the first song, Somebody Knocking, I think is the best song that he's ever done. And that album, it never gets old to me. A lot of times I'll go through my CD collection, I'll see it and put it in. And just, man, what a talent he was.
Something you're not going to turn on the radio and hear, and that is a really, really great album. I got that when it first came out. I was a big fan of Guns N' Roses, a big fan of Izzy Stradlin, and it was different for sure. But like you said, it's got all these different elements of different things. I remember one time being in a store in the mall and hearing the actual version of Pressure Drop, and I had no idea it was a cover of a reggae tune. I didn't even know it was a cover. And I'm listening to it, and I'm like, yeah, I know this song, Izzy Stradlin, right? What is this? This is weird. You know, so I knew the Izzy Stradlin version first, but, you know, this album, even a lot of the solo stuff, you know, people don't know that Izzy Stradlin's put out a lot of albums over the years. But his solo stuff is really, really good.
It just flies so under the radar.
And I think people owe it to themselves, especially if you're a fan of, like you said, New York Dolls, punk rock, Guns N' Roses, stuff like that. If you're a fan of this stuff, you owe it to yourself to check out the Izzy Stradlin solo stuff because it's all really, really good.
Yeah.
When it sounded, this particular song sounded like it was 1972 era Rolling Stones to me.
Yeah.
Just has that Stone 70s swagger to it. And I've become Facebook friends with Jimmy Ashurst. I don't know if y'all are familiar with him. He was in the Juju Hounds and then was in Buck Cherry for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And we're actually, fingers crossed, going to have him on our podcast here soon.
Oh,
but,
cool.
To talk about that album, but he helped write the music on it, and Izzy wrote a lot of the lyrics. And I asked him, you know, I've always heard there's that line in the song where Izzy says, "If you see my old friends out there, tell them that I send my love." I've always heard that was kind of a wink and a nod, you know, obviously to the Guns N' Roses guys. And I asked him about it, and he just said, "You'll have to ask Izzy. He wrote the lyrics." So, anyway, I thought that was a cool line. But, you know, Shuffle It All was the single that came out. Shuffle It All is a great song.
Yep.
Got a very memorable, you know, bass line to it and the organ. And just it's a great song. But Somebody Knocking, I think, is just as good and just a tad bit better than Shuffle It All. But you're right. So Izzy puts out these albums. He doesn't tour. He doesn't do any interviews, and they just come out a lot. Some of them are good. Some of them, to me, are just sound like a lot of filler. But, man, he's talented, and I would kill for them to do a true GNR reunion.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was just thinking that because there's, you know, Slash has mentioned in interviews that there is material written for another album. Just depends on what Axl wants to do with it. But if they do another album, I know Izzy probably will never tour with them again because they can't meet his number or whatever. They at least need to write with the guy.
Yeah, for sure. For it to be authentic Guns N' Roses songs, yeah, for sure. I would think so.
Well, he helped write a lot of those Velvet Revolver songs in the beginning as well.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he helped with them. And I don't know if they officially credited him with it, but you know, he went out there and was going to be in the band for a while, from what I understand, and you know, just got nervous. I think I've heard him say he just doesn't like being around lead singers. And so,
when you consider those two,
right?
Yeah, I can definitely understand why he feels that way.
He's just not with the right one yet.
Right.
Oh, man.
Is it too early to request Izzy Stradlin for Rockin' Pod 3?
Well, I could request him all I want, but yeah, good luck getting him.
That'd be awesome. Be like, hey, man, you know, you do all your interviews for the whole year in one day.
Right.
And just be done with it and be satisfied.
Here's what you could do. You could have a bidding war to who gets the only – say he's only going to do one interview and just have a bidding war.
Yeah, with those giant podcaster budgets.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, so that's a good start. What do you got after this
Love
one?
Love it.
All right, so my second song is going to be from the second Jerry Cantrell album, Degradation Trip. It's called Locked On. The second album that he solo album he did, Degradation Trip, was released, I believe, a couple of months before Layne Staley died. Mm-hmm. The album primarily deals with the breakup of Alice in Chains and his, I guess, become disillusioned with being a rock star, and obviously a lot of it has to do with, you know, the deteriorating health of Layne Staley at the time. And I mean, let's be honest, Ray Charles could have seen how that was going to end, unfortunately. And this is a song called Locked On. To me, it has everything that makes Jerry Cantrell great. A great riff, beautiful melody with his vocals, and it's just a great song. It has to do with being a rock star and the excess that comes with it. We'll be right back. People aren't familiar with that album, I would highly recommend it. It actually was released as a double album later, volumes 1 and 2. It is a dark album, and Cantrell has said when he got through writing the album, he legitimately worried that he was mentally ill. It's very dark. I used to listen to it a lot, just like Alice in Chains. Dirt is probably my second favorite album of all time, but I hardly ever listen to either one of those anymore because they're so dark. And when you think about the subject matter on Dirt, it played out in real life.
Yeah.
And it's kind of depressing, but I really like Cantrell's solo stuff. And I meant to look this up, but I'm pretty sure that William Duvall, who sings with Alice in Chains now, was on this album as a guitar player and doing some backing vocals. I'm 99% sure on that.
Yeah, I know. And Robert Trujillo was on this. Mm-hmm. And I forget who else. I mean, but he had a super group going on with that. And, man, I love the Degradation Trip CD. I got the original version that came out, and I got the double album version. It's really – I mean, there's some amazing, amazing stuff on there. But like D-Hud says, it's so dark.
Yeah.
You know, it's really – it'll put you in a mood,
yeah,
you know, when you listen to it. And if you're in a bad mood, it's not going to help you feel better.
Yeah, and you mentioned Dirt, because I remember when I was in high school and Dirt came out. I love the album, but like you said, you get depressed listening to it, especially
right.
If you go from front to back of it. By the end of the album, you feel like shit.
Right, yeah. It's like the total opposite of listening to a Poison album. You
pretty
know,
much.
You don't get the same feelings by listening to those two different bands.
Yeah. There's no groupies and silly string at the end of Alice in Chains.
No, no, there's not.
Have either of you guys listened to the new Alice in Chains album that just came out?
I have listened through it 3 times so far.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my complaint with it. It's all starting kind of to sound the same.
It is.
Kind of mid-tempo.
Yep.
Now, song number 9, I think it's called Never Fade.
Mm-hmm.
I really like a lot. That's my favorite song on the album. But you know, what was the last one? The Devil Put Dinosaurs Here.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing. There were some very cool vocal arrangements on songs like Voices and Scaffold and things like that. But the first album to me they did with Duvall,
Black Gives Way to Blue.
Man, I thought it was great.
That's a great album. Yeah.
Check My Brain. I mean, that's just a great song. But yeah, you know, I don't know if y'all know this because I thought this was interesting. We interviewed Toby Wright at the Expo. We haven't posted it yet, but Chris and I, my co-host, basically said we're just going to ask him about a couple albums. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to know all about the Alice in Chains stuff because the song that got me to love Alice in Chains was What the Hell Have I off the Last Action Hero soundtrack. Right. And he mixed it.
Yep.
And that is a unique song, especially for the time. It had a sitar in it and just has a really cool groove to it. And I told him after that, I went back and just really got into Dirt. And of course, he did the Tripod album and he mixed Jar of Flies.
Yep.
So when we got done talking to him, we asked him, what is your greatest achievement? What's the thing that you've done you're the most proud of? Mm-hmm. He said mixing the Alice in Chains Unplugged album.
Yeah, I think he told us that too.
Yeah.
I think Alice in Chains is probably his favorite band that he ever worked with.
I thought for sure he was going to say Carnival of Souls.
No. He did us a favor by talking for 2 hours about that one. I mean, I think he enjoyed it, but it's, yeah, he's a, after that one though, he was like, I'll talk to you guys again, but no more Kiss.
He's a super nice guy too.
Yeah.
I would like to see Jerry Cantrell do more solo albums. Like you say, with the Alice in Chains thing. I mean, just to me, always it seemed like without Lane Staley, it's just not Alice in Chains. And William Duvall is a great singer and they're writing some really good stuff, but it's just not the same, you know. And I actually prefer the Jerry Cantrell solo stuff.
That Boggy Depot album's
really good. Boggy Depot's really good. I like that too. But, as far as his solo stuff, you just can't top Degradation Trip, though.
The thing I think whenever I listen to a lot of Alice in Chains now is it's like so many of their songs you had – Cantrell in the right speaker and Staley in the left speaker.
Yep.
And I feel like it's, you know, you're at work and you can't put both earbuds in, so you got to put one earbud in and you can only, you know, you can only hear the right channel.
Because he's a one earbud man.
They're two of the greatest, that's one of the greatest vocal duos of all time, in my opinion.
Totally. And yeah, no doubt.
Just haunting melodies and his back, and Cantrell's backing vocals are just, man, they're, in my opinion, they're up there with Michael Anthony, you know, as far as adding layers to songs. But yeah, Locked On, I love that song off of Degradation Trip.
Great pick.
I'd like to see Jerry and Toby get back together and do something.
Oh, me too.
That'd be amazing.
I think that would be awesome. So, all right. So good 1-2 punch out of the gate.
So far, so good.
Where are we going next?
All right, number three, a song that I love off Guns N' Roses, Use Your Illusion 1, Dead Horse.
Yes.
It's toward the end of that album, one of the more, I guess you would say straight ahead rockers that's not blown up and fat off those two albums. I could do without the little acoustic intro, but man, once it kicks in, it's just straight ahead rock and roll, and kind of wish they'd had a little bit more of that on those albums. But that's one, if I'm driving, man, the speed goes up when Dead Horse is on.
Sick of this life, not that you care. I'm not the only one with whom these feelings I share. Nobody understands quite why we're here. We're searching for answers that never appear. Maybe if I looked real hard, I'd see you trying to understand this life that we're all going through. Then when she said she was gonna like wreck my car,
I'm
that's probably my favorite song on both of those albums.
Yeah, it's right up there for sure.
Yeah.
It's nice to talk to kindred spirits, because I tell that to a lot of people, and they just look at me like I got three heads.
Yeah.
Like, really? Dead Horse? And I'm like, it's a great song.
It is a great song.
It's kind of like a hidden gem. It doesn't get brought up very much in conversation when people talk about the Use Your Illusion albums. Yeah. But it's like you said, it's a little bit more of an old school Guns N' Roses.
And everybody talks about November Rain, you know, and Estranged and the big hit songs off of that. But there were so many good under tracks, you know, and that's one of them for sure.
Did you guys catch them on the reunion tour?
No, I haven't won the Powerball yet, so I can't really see them. That and I don't like to stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. I saw them in New Orleans, and they actually went on stage 2 minutes early.
I've heard they were really punctual on this last tour.
And you know, they played like over 3 hours, and they played some deep cuts, and I just had my fingers crossed. It's like tonight's gonna be the night they're gonna break out Dead Horse, but
no luck, huh? Didn't
happen. But damn. What are y'all's thoughts on Use Your Illusion 1 and 2? I like them both, but there's some filler on there.
There's a lot of filler.
For sure. I think I could make one excellent album out of it, you know, but then my excellent album, like if the three of us all sat down and said, okay, combine Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 into one album, mm-hmm. I think all three of us would probably end up with different track lists.
Sure.
But, I mean, there's definitely some songs on there I think that would be excluded from almost everybody's. But I'd have songs like Double Talk and Jive, Dead Horse, you know, Pretty Tied Up, stuff like that. To me, the hard rock and straight ahead, the stuff that was more like Appetite spoke more to me. And like the Estranged and the
I like Estranged.
I mean, it's okay, but like, you know, I think D-Hud described it perfectly. It's kind of fat and bloated.
Oh, it's very overblown.
Way overproduced, you know. Give me the straight ahead rockers every day.
Somebody, I don't remember who it was that told me, they said it was Axl Rose attempting to do an Elton John album on some of their songs.
Or a Bohemian Rhapsody or something like that.
Do a big grand epic album. And it succeeded. I mean, you know, you can't argue the success of the albums, but I don't know. It was one of those too much, too soon things.
Right. Well, then that makes you kind of glad it was a double album, because then at least you still got the songs like Dead Horse, you know, mixed in there.
Well, it's kind of, if I have to bring it back to Kiss,
the Garden, you know.
There's people that are like, oh, Hot in the Shade didn't need 15 songs. But at the same time, in hindsight, though, if they had cut it down to 10, we'd all be dying to hear those other five songs.
Right.
So, you know, you can never have too much of one of your favorite band's songs. You can always make a playlist. We all do.
Sure, because everybody's going to say, okay, if I was going to erase five songs off of here, it'd be these five. But everybody's five songs are going to be different.
Right.
So you might as well include them
Just have them.
Give a little something for everybody.
Yeah. Agreed. All right.
Shit, yeah. I love it.
Well, I like all your picks so far. What do you got going next?
All right. Next, we're going to go with Undertow by Warrant off the first song off the Ultraphobic album. I will have to admit, I dropped off the Warrant bandwagon after Dog Eat Dog, and it wasn't because I didn't like Dog Eat Dog. That's my favorite Warrant album, and I think one of the best albums of that whole genre. But at that point, I was in college and was getting more into bands like the Allman Brothers and Widespread Panic and a lot of jam band stuff. This was something that came on my radar later. And this album is great, and it just shows how great of a songwriter Janie Lane was. And this song has a killer riff and groove, and it gets the adrenaline going.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know a lot of people say it was kind of their attempt to sound more like grunge, but you can't fault people. I mean, when they go from making millions of dollars and then all of a sudden, you know, there's the famous story where they walk in the record company and their picture's down and Alice in Chains is up. So I don't fault those bands trying to do that. But for me, this everything worked on this album, and the closer Stronger Now, I think is probably the best ballad he's ever written. And I don't understand why country music, somebody in country music has not heard of that song and said, we can make a hit out of this.
It totally would be a hit.
Yeah.
It's one of the, it's an incredibly well-written ballad. And I know Aaron, you're not a ballad guy, but
no, but you can't deny that song. It's so strong and powerful and beautiful at the same time, and still manages to kick ass, you know, even though it's a sweet love ballad. But I mean, yeah, when you talk about Janie Lane and his songwriting abilities and, how overlooked he is by the, I guess, the main media or, just casual fans would think, oh, Cherry Pie Guy.
Yeah.
You know, but man, listen to that song Stronger Now, or even Undertow. Undertow is such a hard rock and kick-ass song. I don't hear no grunge in that. Mm-hmm. I hear like Bonfire and, you know, songs like that where Warrant would just come forward and just kick you in the face, you know, and show that, you know, we're so much more than just the poppy stuff. You're like, because that was the thing about Warrant. Again, you know, they're in this genre, but they're doing all kinds of different things. Like, all the songs on the album are a little bit different from each other, enough to where they say, okay, well, we're just going to lump you in by what you look like, you know? And so we're going to say these long-haired pretty boys, you know, but if you listen to the music, you really couldn't pin Warrant down, because look at the difference between a song like Undertow or Cherry Pie or Uncle Tom's Cabin or Stronger Now, you know, and they're all totally unique songs. And that's, I think, the strength of Janie Lane's songwriting ability was he could do it all.
Yeah.
He could really do it all.
Was Ultraphobic, was this one that was released on CMC?
I think you're thinking of Belly to Belly.
Okay, that was after this one.
Yeah, right? That was the really weird one.
But was this still a major label release?
No.
It was on like one of those smaller labels, right?
Yeah, because Dog Eat Dog was it for them.
Yeah, that was their last one.
Yeah.
Okay, but I remember when it came out and...
So saying, you know, it'd be easy not for it to be on your radar because you'd have to really seek it out back then, which I was still into Warrant, so I sought it out. I mean, I was even excited in 94 when Belly to Belly came out.
But when this came out, I remember... I didn't buy it. A friend of mine did, though, and I remember I was excited for it because Metal Edge was still doing a lot of coverage on them at the time.
Yeah.
And it came out, and then it was me and my friend who bought it, and we were like the only two people that still dug Warrant and were at least able to admit it.
Yeah.
And we were sitting at a party with like 10 other people, and he started playing this album. And, like, there's people grooving along, like, what is this? And the minute the name Warrant came out, all this shit got flying.
Yeah.
Everybody, oh... The fucking Cherry Pie, turn that shit off, you know.
But a second ago when you didn't know
they were digging it before.
They were jamming,
It was really kind of pathetic.
Yeah. See, who's the posers now?
Yeah. But
they it's funny how they just completely dropped off the radar, even though their music to me got better as they went along up until this point.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I love it. Anytime we play Warrant on this show, it's a good episode.
All right. So what's the next pick?
All right, so the next one is a little bit from my man Aaron Camaro here. I know he's a huge Enough's Enough fan. I'll be honest with you, my knowledge of them doesn't extend very much past Fly High Michelle and New Thing. But I stumbled across their covers album. I think it's called Covered in Gold.
Yes.
And, I mean, I love it. It's got She Sells Sanctuary on it, Gene Genie. They do... you guys remember what's the song? The Greatest American Super.
Yeah.
That's my favorite song on their album.
Yeah, so it's got that.
Their cover of Gene Genie's badass too.
Yeah,
it is. So I am not a Nirvana fan. I'm not scared to say that. I don't like them. I think they're overrated. People go, well, they sold millions of albums. Well, to quote Noel Gallagher one time, he said, "So did Phil Collins." So,
what's wrong with Phil Collins?
I don't know. Noel Gallagher is probably one of my favorite
people.
But
what's right with him?
Hey. Yeah, Noel Gallagher is one of the best follows interviews you can listen to. But so with that said, I like it when a band does a covers album and they make the song their own, but they don't completely break it down to something else. And Enough's Enough did that on this. It kicks in. If you have your speakers, if you have your volume turned up loud, the bass will just about blow your speakers out at the beginning. And they play All Apologies, which I think has a great groove to it. But and they just have bongos in the background instead of conventional drums. And when I heard that, I was like, this is really, really good. And so I have it incorporated into several playlists, and I just absolutely love it. And like I said, not a big Nirvana fan. A lot of it, I admitted on one of our podcasts one time, was I hold it against them for what happened to a lot of the bands that I grew up listening to. But as we said on one of our podcasts, grunge didn't kill glam. Mm. Glam killed glam.
No, I hold it against Pretty Boy Floyd.
Yeah.
don't tell my co-host Chris that. He loves Pretty Boy Floyd. But yeah,
I'm very sorry.
So yeah, Enough's Enough. All Apologies. If you haven't heard that, go listen to it. Especially get the Covered in Gold album, because it does not disappoint.
Song's a trip, man. To hear Enough's Enough covering Nirvana,
that's a weird one.
That's like throwback to a little bit earlier in the show when we were talking about Alice in Chains, Check Your Brain. Have you ever heard LA Guns do a cover of that?
Yes.
It's freaking awesome.
I think I have.
I love it when these bands take a song that, you know, it was okay, you know, like you say, I'm not the biggest Nirvana fan in the world either, but that song was all right. But to hear Enough's Enough do it in such a unique way, and I mean, Donnie V is, let's face it, a way better singer than Kurt Cobain could ever dream to be. And, you know, like you say, that powerful bass, it chips Enough in there. And it's I don't know, man. It's far out for sure, but I like it too.
I got to bring this up because you brought up the Greatest American Hero cover song.
That's a great cover.
And I love it too. It's like my favorite thing on the Covered in Gold album. But like I shared like around the time we interviewed Donnie, I was corresponding a lot with him on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I took a copy, a link of that, and I think I put it on his page, and I was like, why doesn't this ever get played live? And he goes, because it sucks. And yeah. He totally dogged it out. And I was like, oh, man, I think you do a great job on that song. Well, he's like, yeah, but we had no business doing that song.
Right, but that's what he said when we interviewed him, too, that time, where it's like, he hates doing cover songs,
yeah.
You know, period.
That's more
doesn't
Chip's
like
thing,
it.
I think.
Yeah, he just wants to write his own stuff, and he doesn't like doing covers, even though he's freaking awesome at
he
it.
He is, yeah.
Hey, speaking of covers, I know y'all are big John Corabi fans like I am. Have y'all heard him do Maggie May?
Oh, shit. Yeah. I got that CD, the I forget what it's called, but it's a tribute to Rod Stewart. There's a bunch of cool stuff on there.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know I liked Rod Stewart until I heard metal bands and hard rock bands doing his songs. And I'm like, okay, you know, maybe I don't like Rod Stewart, but I can't deny some of these songs.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one especially.
Good stuff so far. What do you got?
All right, so my next song is She's Too Tough by Def Leppard. Now, this song was originally recorded for Adrenalize, but for whatever reason did not make the cut. And it was released on their B-side compilation. I think it's called Retroactive. This is more of a straight-ahead rocker. The production on it's pretty slick, but I think if you tone the production down, it would have fit nicely on something like High and Dry. And it definitely should have beat out a few of the songs, that, in my opinion, that were on Adrenalize. And, you know, Def Leppard, excuse me, for a long time, you could not stream really any of their music other than some, like, re-recorded versions. And I guess it was last year they were able to negotiate and got their entire catalog put on, like, Spotify and Apple. And so this song was available again because Retroactive was out of print. But this is a fun song to listen to. Joe Elliott's vocals are great on it. And Phil Collin and Vivian Campbell just do a great job playing guitar on it.
was one too, because I hadn't heard this song before, and so I had to look it up, and I was listening to it. It was on the YouTube, and I thought it was an older song. I really did. I thought this was Steve Clark era, like way back. And then it was like Adrenalize 92? Mm-hmm. Really? But it's got that old school Def Leppard feel to it for sure.
Well, it got dropped from the album because, you know, you got to have Make Love Like a Man on there.
Oh, man. I'm telling you what, I was so excited when Adrenalize came out.
Me
because
too.
I was 11 when Hysteria came out. And I guess it was like a year or so after it was out, I got a friend of mine made me a copy of it on the cassette, but he didn't write down the song titles. And so for the longest time, I had a hard time, you know, figuring out what the names of some of the songs were. But I was so excited, you know, they were going to come out, and then, you know, Steve Clark died. And then, you know, it was just one thing after another. And they were my first hard rock concert that I ever went to. I saw them in the Round in Memphis at the Pyramid. Mm. And I've always kind of had a little bit of a soft spot in my heart for Def Leppard. I know a lot of people like to give them a hard time, and some of it's deserved and some of it's not. But that B-Sides album does have some good songs on it. And then, man, this for sure could have beat out, like you said, Make a Love Like a Man. gosh.
Well, Let's Get Rocked was a single, and I hate that song.
That song gets old quick.
Oh, it's awful.
They still play it. I saw them last summer with Poison, and they played it, and I was like, man, you could have played, you know, High and Dry or, you know, anything off Pyromania. But if you're not familiar with that song, it's a good one. It's a straight ahead rocker.
Yeah, this song, when you picked it and I was looking at it and listened to it and stuff, it got me thinking about Adrenalize in 92, how huge that was.
It was huge.
In a time where a Def Leppard album probably shouldn't have been huge. You know, we just talked about Warrant, how they dropped off around 92.
They survived it, though.
But Def Leppard, I mean, that album, that was their last really, really big one.
Yeah.
But I think the video for Let's Get Rocked, done by the same guy that did the Dire Straits,
Money for Nothing. Yeah,
I think that CGI was a big deal because CGI was new and unique at the time. I think that definitely helped it. But in a time where other bands that were kind of, you know, in the same realm as Def Leppard are dropping off left and right, Def Leppard's still selling a billion albums.
Yeah.
In 92.
Yeah,
and Joe Elliott's permed mullet was completely out of control.
Oh, man. Maybe that's why they survived. The hair was just too much to deny.
You can't deny it.
But that album did have – I like the song White Lightning that was about Steve Clark and Heaven Is. I like that.
Yeah, that's okay.
It wasn't in Tear It Down. Now, I like the version of Tear It Down that's on the Hysteria reissue that's a little more raw than the one on Adrenalize. But you could have taken any number of songs down and put She's Too Tough on it. It would have been just fine.
Any song that wasn't a single on that album was pretty good.
Right.
Yeah, that's actually true.
That's weird.
They always seem to like cater their single choices to the female audience. Yeah.
Here's one for the ladies. Here's another one for the ladies.
Well, if you listen to interviews with them, I don't think they like being identified as a hard rock band.
They do not.
No, but when you look at them in their early years, they were definitely a part of that new wave of British heavy metal. You know, but to deny that's the coolest thing, you know?
Yeah.
I guess the guys wearing, denim vests and stuff like that, but not to the ladies.
Yeah.
They want to be made love to.
And that's why
a man.
That's why Phil Collin doesn't wear a shirt. All right. So what do we got next?
All right. So I feel like I'm 6 for 6 so far with you guys, but I know I'm going to get a lot of pushback on this one.
Well, for me, you will.
Blind Faith by Poison off the Native Tongue album.
I love it.
Now, personally, Native Tongue is my second favorite Poison album behind Flesh and Blood. But I think they really messed up by having Stand be the first single for a couple of reasons. One, you're putting a ballad out as your first single. And two, it was more acoustic than anything. This song, to me, I think would have been the perfect introduction to Richie Kotzen because it shows his musicianship. The lyrics a little more in line with, you know, a Poison album. And this is kind of, you know, an anthemic song that you could see, you know, lighting up an arena. They never played it live. I don't know why. Wow. But this is my probably my favorite song on that album, at least of the rockers on it. And just an album that, unfortunately, in my opinion, Chris, gets overlooked a lot.
It's just – it doesn't – this album just does not work for me.
See, I like it, but not in the same way that I like the stuff with CeCe DeVille. You know, CeCe DeVille's got his own flavor, and Richie Kotzen – by God, he's definitely got his own flavor, just, and it just doesn't...
He was too different for the band.
Yeah, I mean, but Poison, I think, at the time, maybe were trying to be a little bit bluesier, trying to try something a little bit different. I think it's a damn good album. You know, it's way different than the stuff with CeCe, for sure. But, I mean, it's still... I could see how a Poison fan, a true Blue Poison fan, could have heard that time and been like, ugh, this is strange.
I bought it on release day, and I was, because I knew who Richie was because of all the Shrapnel releases, because I was big into Shredders and stuff,
right.
and I was like, this is going to be a can't miss.
You were thinking he's going to be on there
Yeah,
shredding?
I thought it was going to be a wild, over-the-top shred fest.
No.
And then it's all this bluesy stuff. I was like, what the fuck happened? And then also, it's like, it's, you know, and yes, I'm being a hypocrite. There's other bands like Kiss and other bands where I like it when they experiment with other sounds and try to mix it up. I just don't like it when Poison tries to do it. It just doesn't come off for me.
There's some damn good songs on that album, though.
No, it's
I think it is highly overlooked.
But it's
for sure.
It never translated for me as a Poison fan.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Well, I'm like you. The day that it came out, I was in high school. I got out of school. I drove straight to the music store. Put it in. That was back in the days when you had a Discman in your car and you have it like mounted on the center console and then you had the tape, you know, going into the tape deck or whatever and throwing that in and just being like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And of course, at that time, it was starting to be very uncool to say you were a Poison fan. I was like, I remember taking it to a lot of people like, look, this isn't the Poison of 2 years ago. This is fantastic.
Visualize.
Richie Kotzen, man, can he play? That's for sure. I know Sonny Pooney's going to love that I picked this one.
Just going to say that. Yeah, Sonny Pooney approves of this episode.
I was going to say, I bet you this is Sonny Pooney's favorite Poison album also.
Oh, there's no question.
Man, is there a nicer guy in podcasting?
No. Sonny Pooney is about as nice as you get.
Yeah, he's cool. I love him.
Oh, man. All right. So, well, you're
Hollywood.
You're 6 for 7 in my book. I think 7 for 7 in Aaron's.
Yeah, I think you're doing a great job. You're hired.
All right.
All right. My next song is Rise by The Cult. It's off the Beyond Good and Evil album.
Shoot, yeah.
Good album.
Now, this, if I remember correctly, was their comeback album, because I think they had called it a day after the self-titled album with, like, the goat or whatever it was on the front.
Yeah.
This album has some great songs. It has one of their better ballads, Nico, has True Believers on it, has Rise, man. If you have that on at the gym, you're on the treadmill, you can kick it up an extra mile or two per hour, with that on. I feel like The Cult just doesn't get enough recognition, in my opinion. Because I think the music company didn't exactly know what to do with them at times, because, you know, obviously, Love, was not electric for sure, and then Electric was just more of a straight ahead rock album. Sonic Temple comes along, they try to glam it up a little bit, and then you had Ceremony, and I loved Ceremony. I'm one of the people that like Ceremony.
Like,
and then, you know, things kind of went off the rails with that self-titled album. This was a return to form, and it's probably my third favorite Cult album, to be honest with you.
The love that rises again. They are the same.
Well, they were never going to get giant because, well, they're the Cult. Bad joke.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
So you would say you would say the song Rise is a Cult favorite.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Nah. Dum-dum. Tip your waitress. But no, I love that album. I think Beyond Good and Evil is a good album, and it came out at a weird time because there was all kinds of ridiculous stuff in the rock world on the chart, so it definitely got overshadowed. I think you talked about playing this on the radio, didn't you?
When it was new, because it was a big deal because, like you said, the Cult was back, you know, and they were back strong and they had some good songs. I love that tune, True Believers, off there. There's a bunch of good stuff off that album. I'm a big Cult fan. I always have been. But, you know, what D-Hud's saying is I can agree with it totally. Every album by this band, it's the same band, but every album is different.
Yeah, they kept
reinventing
themselves. It's
like they really go forward instead of going, oh, hey, that last album did really good. Let's do another one of those. It's like, no, that last album did pretty good. Let's do something completely different.
Yeah.
You know, it's still going to sound like the Cult because it's still got, you know, the powerful drums and bass, great guitar playing, you know, Ian Astbury, one of the most unique vocals in all of rock history. And so it's always going to be the Cult, but still musically and even lyrically and sonically, every album is different than the one before.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we've done that. Now let's do something different.
And you're talking about Ian. Billy Duffy, to me, is one of the coolest looking and playing guitar players of all time.
Oh, yeah.
They opened up for Guns N' Roses on that Guns N' Roses show I went to, and I don't know if I've ever seen a better opening act. And for a long time, to me, Ian, he didn't really sing a lot of the melodies. Like on Sweet Soul Sister, he would just go Sweet Soul Sister, and it used to frustrate me because that's one of my favorite Cult songs. And when we saw him, he was fully singing it, and he sounded great. I don't know if, you know, those guys at some point had substance problems or whatever, but they seem to be very, very healthy and just on top of their game. And the last album they put out wasn't bad. It had some good songs on it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
All right. Here's some more Cult in the future, I hope.
All right. So you got two left.
All right. So I'm going to go with a song off my favorite Tesla album, and the album is Psychotic Supper. The song is Edison's Medicine. This is my favorite of all the Tesla rockers. We met Troy Laquette at the expo. He'll be on our podcast soon. Super nice guy. We asked him. I told him, I said, Psychotic Supper is my favorite album. He like threw his hands up there and said, yes. And he said, it's the band's favorite album.
Oh,
and
we'll be right back.
Tesla, to me, they get completely unfairly characterized as being a hair band. Same thing with Tora Tora, who we heard at the expo. But in a lot of ways, these bands are very similar. But, you know, Tesla's lyrics had more substance than a lot of the bands at the time, especially this, when they're talking, you know, about Thomas Edison going around stealing people's inventions and getting the credit for it. I mean, you know, Poison's not writing about that. That's for sure.
And if they were, the fans would be like, what?
Go ahead. But yeah, this song, it's my favorite of their rockers. And like I said, the album to me is just amazing. And I actually asked him, I said, why don't you guys play some of the deeper cuts off of it more, like Stir It Up? Yeah. And he kind of looked at me and he said, we've actually been talking about adding that to the set list on this next tour.
Nice.
So, yeah, a great album that came out really at the wrong time for them to capitalize on, to me, in my opinion, on the success of Great Radio Controversy. But I know you guys are huge Tesla fans, aren't you?
Yeah, totally. And I think you're right, you know, where Tesla really doesn't fit in with a lot of the other stuff in the genre. To me, Tesla, and like you say, even Tora Tora, is like an evolution of Skynyrd. Like it's heavy southern rock. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely got that flavor to it. And, you know, they're not Motley Crue, and they're not Poison, and they're not Skid Row, and they're not, you know, all these other bands. They're so different. Heavy, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, hard rocking, you bet. But again,
a tinge of blues.
Yeah, a tinge of blues and a touch of that Skynyrd flavoring, yeah. I think, a little bit. And I always appreciated that about Tesla, the fact that they were different, but, man, they could still kick it in the ass and did regularly.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this, you've never seen Tesla live and they're coming to your town, don't miss them.
No,
they for sure.
An incredible live band.
Yeah.
We know the new album that's coming out, Phil Collin produced it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And they did, you know, they toured with them two summers in a row.
Yeah.
And they, I think, recorded a lot of it at sound checks and stuff like that.
Hmm.
So, you know, they released Mechanical Resonance Live.
I have
that. And they had a bonus song on there that Phil Collin helped write. I think it's like Say Hello to the Goodness or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Something like Keep That Goodness or something.
Yeah, Keep That Goodness.
Yeah, there's a video for it.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think he was like Jeff Keith singing in front of a church or something like that. But, yeah, man, they're just such a good band. And just, you know, they're a great example of a band that doesn't really change, but that doesn't bother you that they don't change.
Right.
Yeah.
Kind of like AC/DC, you know, I'm looking forward to that and hopefully getting to see them do a full set instead of just the only time I've ever seen them was opening for Poison and, Def Leppard last summer. And speaking of that southern influence, have you guys listened to Frank Hannon's covers album?
Not yet.
No.
All right. Are you familiar with the band Blackberry Smoke?
Oh, sure.
All right. So they cover a song by them called Sunrise in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he does. And man, it is amazing.
I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah, I definitely want to check that out. I love cover albums. I love hearing different slants on different songs. Like you said, like the Enough's Enough tune, you know, a band doing a cover of something that could have been a good song and rocking it out and making it something awesome.
When speaking of covers albums, Tesla, those two out Reel to Reel, I think they were called.
Oh, man. Best one of the – you got to put that up there with one of the best cover albums ever, 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 ever.
Yeah, I saw them they did a full set at the Ryman for that album. And I got press credentials, got to, you know, go backstage and everything, and
right on. And
that was one of the best concerts I've ever been to. And they did do a couple of the songs off of there. I think they did Bell Bottom Blues two or three others. So
and that's the thing about that album too. Like you look at Ace Frehley's, you know, covers album, and it's like, yeah, you did the cover of Wild Thing, you know, you did these songs that, you know, everybody does, you know, but Tesla, man, when they picked their songs, they picked amazing songs, like songs you go, oh, you know, I remember my dad, you know, when being a kid and hearing that play on the radio, and that was always kind of a good song. But Tesla doing it with electric guitars, this is one of the greatest things I've ever heard. Day of the Eagle is an awesome cover off that. So many good songs on that. If you're a Tesla fan, if you were ever a Tesla fan, if you're a fan of good music, check out the Reel to Reel Volume 1 and 2. They're
great
just
albums.
Got to be the best covers maybe ever.
Yeah, awesome. Well, before we intro your last song, man, I hope you've gotten your money's worth. We certainly enjoyed all your picks today.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I've enjoyed it greatly. Like I said, you get Steve Gorman of the Black Crowes at the Expo next year, and I'll double the donation amount.
Oh, jeez. We'll do a heavier side of the Black Crowes.
Hey, we could do that.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, I could completely do that. Yeah,
easy.
For sure.
Yeah, we'll have you come on for that one. That'd be fun.
Yeah, for sure.
But we'll plug your podcast real quick. Tell people where they can find it, and you know, give us some of your highlight interviews that people could check out.
It's Digital Killed the Radio Star. You can follow us on Twitter at Digital Killed, on Facebook and Instagram, Digital Killed the Radio Star Podcast. We're on Stitcher, Apple Podcast, SoundCloud, Podchaser, Earpeeler. There's another one called Laughable that I found out that we're on. But we've got some cool interviews coming up. In the past year, we interviewed Michael Graves, that was the lead singer of the Misfits for a while.
Yeah.
We had him on this really heavy band out of Massachusetts called Astronoid. They are kind of like a combination of heavy metal and shoegaze. We had Casey Elward, their guitar player, on. Fingers crossed, there's a good chance I'm going to have Pat Sansone of Wilco on in a couple of weeks. He's kind of that's a big band. We've had some great guests talking about stuff like Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, and got one coming up where we're going to spend the whole time talking about Appetite of Destruction. And I'm doing a Black Crowes series where I'm going for those out there, the Black Crowes are kind of like Kiss is for you guys. So I'm going through their entire discography with super fans. Cool. And we're just hoping to land some bigger interviews and things like that. I know Todd Poole has texted me when the new Roxy album comes out, we're going to interview the whole band.
Let me give that a plug, because these guys, like, we wanted to get Todd Poole on from Roxy Blue after he showed up at the Expo last year, because Roxy Blue, we both love that album from back in the day. And then D-Hud and Chris had him on for, like, it was like a 3-hour interview.
Yeah.
And after I listened, I was like, we don't need to have him on. And I have directed so many people to listen to that interview, because I was completely blown away by it. I mean, he had such great stories. And you guys pulled so many damn good stories out of him. And you guys were relatively young in the podcast game when you did that.
It's the first interview we ever did.
Yeah, and nice. You totally killed it. So, like, I recommend those of you listening, listen to the Todd Poole interview. You guys will really enjoy that.
Right. And that just goes to show.
He's not hard to interview.
And that goes to show you. I mean, you guys love us here at Decibel Geek because we're passionate and we're real about the music. That goes for Digital Killed the Radio Star, too. You know, same attitude, same love, same respect. If you like what we're doing here, you're definitely going to love what these guys are doing over there.
All right. So my last song, I kind of got a little story behind it. So at the podcast expo last year, Steve Wright and BC from Potter Than Hell, they were newbies like us, didn't have a table or anything. And we met them. And Steve and I have become, I consider Steve a really, really good close friend now. So we hung out the entire time at the expo with those guys, and all four of them, Dylan, BB, BC, and Steve are just great guys. And so I wanted to mention their podcast, Potter Than Hell. And if you like Kiss or just like hard rock and metal, those guys are so much fun to listen to. So I sent Steve a text and I said, hey, I'm going to be guest hosting an episode of Decibel Geek, and I'm doing Radio Sucks. Give me a song. And he gave me three to choose from. And one of them is Gift of Flesh by Def Leppard. And it's off the Slaying album that came out in, I think, 94, 95. And it's a great straight ahead rocker, just like She's Too Tough. And I think it would have sounded great on High and Dry. But it was a song that I had honestly forgotten about. So Steve Wright and Potter Than Hell, go listen to those guys. You will not regret it.
Okay, now Steve owes us $100 for that. I'm just
double shot of Leopard.
All right, so, well, D-Hud, thanks for coming on today. I'm looking forward to seeing you again. Come back in the future.
Yeah.
And here's Def Leppard from Slaying, and we'll see you next week. I'm not afraid to
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.